Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great.
Great.
Yes. I'm optimistic.
Optimistic?
Yes.
I can't believe our luck.
Our luck?
Yes.
Why?
Because, so we decided earlier, or late last week,
yeah,
that today's show would be about the art of optimism.
Right.
And how art can turn things around.
And save the world.
Yes, save the world.
Yes. Save the economy.
Yes. Save the economy. It's happened before.
Yep.
So who, what, to what do I awake? But our prime minister,
yes,
giving the keynote address in Davos, Switzerland, at the World Economic Forum, saying what?
He said, "My predecessor wanted you to know Canada for its resources.
Yes,
I want you to know Canadians for their resourcefulness."
Yeah, and he talked about innovation and creativity and changing the way we think about, and that's exact, and being optimistic.
Yeah.
And when he was interviewed by the CNN dude, the Zach, oh, I can't pronounce his name, sorry. He said that that it was important to be creative and innovative, and that we're capable of doing that. And optimistic. He said, if you win an election dividing people, it's very hard to unite them after the fact.
Yes.
So they purpose that they're being optimistic purposefully.
Nice.
Yes. But so I thought it'd be a good topic because, you know, we're watching a lot of nasty news on TV and online and on the radio. And every time we do that, I think, oh, come on. We need to turn this thing around.
Yeah.
And there's only the two most important, well, there's more than two, but two very big factors in the power of an economy are confidence, right?
Yeah.
And certainty.
Ah.
So those aren't things, you know, that... They're not quantitative. They're qualitative.
Yeah.
Right?
But here's the thing.
And it's a mental game as much as anything
else. I know,
else.
But that's the thing is people...
It's not just a money game.
People's interpretation of certainty changes, right? Mm-hmm. Some people like certainty because all that is to them is a paycheck at the end of the month.
Yeah.
And making sure that they will always have that. Mm-hmm. For other people, certainty is knowing that no matter what happens, there will always be something that will fill in and come in and save the day.
Right.
So everybody's got their idea of certainty. And that's where I think that the creativity and innovation part, that there's not as much confidence in because it's not as concrete. Like when you have a oil price and a coal price and right, like those things feel more concrete, whereas innovation doesn't feel concrete to people.
But it is a mental game.
Yes,
right,
absolutely.
Yeah. And so we need to be talking optimistically, and the media does have a role. And so I thought, well, hey, we have a show. Let's talk about
are media.
Let's make the case for optimism.
Yeah,
right.
Well, like I was just saying before the show, that the visual on the front of the Globe and Mail on Saturday was a giant loony, like a giant golden loony, all crumbling and falling apart, looking like an earthquake hit it.
Aww.
And I looked at that and I felt like, oh, come on.
I know, but it sells newspapers.
I guess. It's like bleeding.
Yeah.
It was really sad to
see
that.
And I know there's a danger in being
Pollyanna-ish,
but I really feel like whoever wins the mental game will win.
Yeah.
And it's, as I say, it's confidence, certainty.
Okay.
Although there's some really hilarious stuff on Facebook. Like I saw, I think Tim Lavery retweeted, "This just in, barrel of oil costs 3 heads of cauliflower." Which is just fantastic.
That is, that's
or
good.
The little kid holding a loony saying, "Look, Mom, I found an American quarter." So we have to be able to laugh.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, I'm not trying to make fun because I know there are people who are in a really tough spot right now. They didn't get called back.
Yeah.
Right?
I know. But
and
there's
so
also people that are dancing in the street here. Yeah. Oh, David Bowie reference there.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the film industry benefits from this, all kinds of exporters, manufacturing, people that work in the States, people that get paid in American dollars, happier than pigs in mud. So there is a balance. Come on.
Yes.
Right?
So well,
all about resource sector.
And so we tend to overinflate the bad and underinflate the good. And I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about the bad. I'm saying we should approach it with confidence.
Yes.
And try and establish some certainty. So you know what we know for sure is the dollar is low and oil is cheap.
Mm-hmm.
End of. We know it.
That's all we know.
That's all we know.
Okay.
So we have confidence and certainty in that. So then the question becomes, now what?
Yeah. Well, okay. Right? Here's the thing. And here's my biggest point. This is, okay. So I kind of figured this was going to be Louise's show because she knows more about economy than I do.
No, you know plenty. However, you're an economist. We're all economists.
You know, I guess we all kind of have our own little world that we, I mean, every sector that we belong in, whatever industry you work in, you know the economics of that sector, right? Okay. So my biggest point about this is that your brain, the way your brain functions is that it doesn't have to come up with ideas while everything is comfortable. It's like the rut.
Yes.
It's a really happy, comfortable rut, but there's really no need to innovate when you're in a comfortable rut.
Yeah.
And so when you present your brain with a problem, it works on it. And the only way that it identifies a problem is when the bottom drops out of your rut.
Or there's a deadline approaching, or, right?
Yeah. Well, something that's not regular. So you have to change your experience. Now, that's something else that a lot of people think, well, I don't want things to have to go bad before my experience changes. But it doesn't have to be that things go bad. It's just that new ideas come from new experiences. Yes. So you have to change what you do. Mm-hmm. And so for some people who are in resource sector, you know, for instance, industries, seeing a future that isn't a comfortable rut suddenly makes them go, okay, well, now let's look around. Now I got to find some people with ideas. Okay, we got a problem here. This thing is only going to last another few years. Yes. We got to find something else. Those are the only things that make our brain innovate.
Yes.
It's being confronted with a problem.
Well, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah. And so why would we think that we could make this planet any more livable or solve any problems or help with, you know, world strife and everything as long as we're sitting in our comfortable rut?
I don't know.
So we have to face these things.
Well, I don't think we're hardwired to do that.
No.
No.
So let's and part I mean, of, in fact, it's necessary.
If you look at it from a planning perspective, it seems to me that the super big oil companies did not have a plan B.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't know that for sure, but yeah. I think it's very important to remember that we all knew this could happen. It's happened before. Mm-hmm. It'll happen again.
Yeah.
And yet we're just so hardwired to live in the now, right?
We are.
And then when the now goes south, everybody starts to panic.
I know.
But panic is the last thing we need to do. Don't panic. And then even by saying don't panic makes people panic.
Yes.
Right? I know. It's ridiculous. And so that's what I mean about the mental game.
But also,
like, you can't say to people, tighten your belts and do this. I really feel like it is a game. And it's a game of your livelihood. I understand that.
Yeah.
I think it's forcing us to be more innovative.
Absolutely.
Scarcity is the mother of innovation.
Yes.
If you have less, you have to figure out a way to do the same with less or more with the same.
Right.
Right. And then that's very interesting. Well, exciting.
It like makes I want a I better think, world.
I see the price of cauliflower and I want to grow a garden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
So you're being innovative.
When cauliflower's 99 cents a pound, I don't need to garden. What would I garden for?
Yeah.
Right?
I know.
That's just my...
Well,
because
I'm
at
the same way.
In a state of
status
quo. But when the status quo changes,
there's
so much opportunity.
Yeah.
And I just want people to say, you know, the thing about opportunity is we usually have it in hindsight. Like, oh, I guess that was opportunity.
Yeah.
I missed it. I wasn't there.
And
that's
because you know that we think of our future selves as strangers, right? Did we talk about this before?
Yeah, the boat.
Yeah, where we don't, like our future self, we think of with the same level of compassion and interest as we think of a stranger, which is almost nothing.
Right.
So we always have to put ourselves, like that's something that I try to do now when I learned that. Is think, okay, what would future Tracy want this to look like?
Exactly.
And I have to make decisions now that might be painful because future Tracy will be happier.
Yeah.
With that.
And if you're not comfortable with future Tracy, make someone up. Right?
Yeah. But I feel
if I were the cool, hip, ideal self of that I think I, you know, like we have four different levels of personality and one of them is the ideal self. And the other one is the looking glass self. So how you think you look to others, the actual self, I can't remember the fourth one, but the ideal self is who you think you're going to be, who you're going to be when you grow up.
Oh.
Yeah.
And lots of us still haven't figured that out.
Yeah. Ask that person.
Oh.
What should I do here? Who am I going
to
be?
Good idea.
Right?
Yeah.
And I lost my thought. Who am I going to be when I grow up? Where did I want to go with that? It's just so important to remember that to not lose the lessons either. right? Mm-hmm. Like if you think, say, I don't want to pick on one. Okay, big oil company A. If they had said 20 years ago, all right, fellas, a lot of fellas, we're going to keep 10% of earnings. I'm going to put in a fund for alternate energy. Because at some point, mm-hmm. if this thing goes south, then we can be ready. We've built a team. We have experts. We have expert contractors, expert researchers, expert employees. We don't want to lose them. We don't want to, right?
Yeah.
So how are they going to rebuild this thing? I don't know. But I feel as if somewhere along the line, we made a big mistake in that we didn't plan for this.
Yeah. And I think that when you're talking about oil, big oil company A, who may not have one person at the helm who can say, okay, I got an idea. Let's put aside 10% mm-hmm. of earnings, because they're being run by a whole lot of different interests that yes. are interested in dividends for their shareholders. Yes. And so maximizing profits was the order of the day yes. for the last 20
well,
years.
And that's the measure. So that's the measure of value.
Yeah.
What's the dividend?
Which is,
what's
that's the problem, worth. Right? That is not considering future self, future
no,
oil
it
company
isn't.
A.
And it isn't. And I think that the shareholders, again, you know, if we act as if shareholders are different from us, we are shareholders too. So,
yeah.
I mean, you don't have a pension. I don't have a pension. Yeah. But people who have pensions are shareholders in major mm-hmm. oil companies. Your parents, my parents, they live off the interest
yeah.
of those RSPs that are in mutual funds that are invested in oil companies, right?
Right.
So we're all part of this. But I think there are future shareholder selves
mm-hmm.
have to start saying to the companies or pension funds, what have you.
Yeah.
You need to have a plan B.
Mm-hmm.
What is the plan B?
Yeah. If they're willing to live with
that has value
$20 less per month in their dividends
mm-hmm.
in order to make sure that their grandchildren have air to breathe.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, keep a thought for the young people who are starting their career in a I don't know that we're a recessionary. Low growth, maybe no growth. I don't think it's negative growth.
At some point, I've always known this, at some point we have to stop growing
mm-hmm.
because we only have a finite planet.
Mm-hmm.
So when do we stop growing and when do we find it acceptable to stop growing?
Yeah, and it has to be, I think it's not about growth so much as what where the exchange of value is. Is the exchange of value in growth or is the exchange of value in enhanced productivity
yeah.
or innovation or automation or specialization?
Well,
like,
but I think as long as we have population growth, we're
yes.
going to have to measure it in, you know, in money,
right.
basically,
yeah.
right? In,
well,
in generated goods and the exchange of money. It's kind of all we have because we haven't had to innovate for anything mm-hmm. else.
Well, we, yes, but we have to remember it's the art of optimism.
Yes.
Yes, we have.
It's ever changing. This is the thing I think that I'm taking away from a lot of this since about 2008 is that we no longer are in a, it's almost like the boom bust cycle used to be like 30 years apart or 20 years apart. Now mm-hmm. it's kind of coming hard and fast, right?
Sure.
It's crazy. It's yeah. a roller coaster.
And you know, the Industrial Revolution is over.
Yeah.
Right?
And we need a new kind of revolution.
Yeah, it's the fourth revolution. This mm-hmm. is a new... Oh, and how exciting to live, you know?
Yeah.
This I would have liked to have been there when they figured out that, hey, you know what? It's cheaper to get four guys to make eight pins than to get four guys to make four pins each. Hence the Industrial Revolution, right?
Oh.
It's called the pin, like the needle theory. So they figured out that everybody specialized along the production line, that they could have greater output.
Oh,
so that's how the production line started, and that was the Industrial Revolution. So, you know what? We're going to get a whole new needle theory.
We are.
Yes, and we're already starting to see it.
Yeah, because we have to.
Yes,
and the problem is here, so the solution
mm-hmm.
will come.
Mm-hmm. And we need to be, and we need to do this, especially in Canada, because demographics, you know, for the demographic situation is such that in the not too distant future, like within 10 years, maybe 20 at most, fewer people will be entering the workforce than leaving it.
Right. That's going to be
so quite who's going to do all the work?
Yeah. Well, robots.
Robots. Right?
Yep.
So we need to be...
They're already talking about that being a major sort of problem in certain third world countries that are big into manufacturing is that mm-hmm. robots are taking their jobs,
yes.
which is already low paying, you know, low benefit jobs. Mm-hmm. So it's already, you know, I mean, it's starting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's probably in preparation for that.
Well, and so automation, specialization, but it doesn't mean those... But the assumption we make is that those people in third world countries who are doing low paying jobs, they should be engineers.
Yeah.
They need to be educated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we have to be careful with the assumptions we make that robots take jobs away.
Well, and that's, I think that was a discussion on CBC Radio one time about that sense that, okay, robots are taking, like, the automation in the manufacturing industry is going to make it worse for these countries. But then the alternate view was that, well, then those people are going to be forced, again, white, the problem, solution, they're going to be forced to seek out other ways of supporting families, which may mean that there's migration, there's maybe innovation in education, ways to get education there, farming, right? Like sustainability, self-sustainability, like all kinds of things are going to have to happen because that breakdown will force them, you know, have to face it. So we're looking at the same thing again, right? Something kind of what feels like the bottom's going to fall out of it, but it's a good thing because then you innovate.
Right.
So it will
have
to have that effect.
And Canada is one of the most, is the second best, or is it third best place to get an education? I mean, we're educated. We have infrastructure. We're well-respected internationally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a big job for us.
Yeah, that's true.
In the world.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and here's the thing about the art sector that I think is important to recognize right now, is that and the arts in general, art sector aspects, cultural things, are like mitigate all of these kinds of economic ups and downs because they are diverse by nature.
Yes. And artists are basically professional problem solvers.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. But the diversity is built in to the art sector. There's everything. And I think the other thing too that recognizes the multiplier effect, and we've talked about this before too, but we have to remember that the multiplier effect affects goods too. It's not just about the taxes and the sort of, you know, generating revenue. It's the things, right, that go along with art sector things. Like they tie restaurants and hotels pretty much directly to arts and cultural events because the multiplier effect is so obvious. It's like a direct line. To those industries.
Yeah, because you go to the gallery, then you go for lunch.
Yeah,
right.
And that's something, you don't tie restaurants and hotels necessarily to pretty much any other industry. Like, just because you're making money in oil doesn't mean all those people eat out more.
No.
Right? Like, this is the biggest, closest tie-in.
So the correlation is.
Yeah. So there's things like that in the art sector.
Correlated.
That's
a funny word.
Yeah. Fashion, shoes, you know, all that kind of stuff is all very closely related to the art sector. So we have to remember that we help diversity, and diversity is what, you know, keeps a lot of economies afloat.
Yes. And that it is a ginormous industry. Mm-hmm. Really, it's a huge sector. $64 billion are contributed to the economy. And we tend to overinflate. Like, I get that the price of oil is tied to everything. And I think what we're seeing now is it's shaking out. It's taking a lot longer to shake out. This started last March.
Yeah.
Probably before last March.
Yeah.
So it's taking a lot longer. And then there's a lot of things they hadn't counted on. And one of them was that many people who work in the oil field are contractors.
Yeah.
So they're not actually employees.
Right.
So they don't get EI.
Yeah.
And they're not on the employment rolls. Right? So there are vast neighborhoods of people whose main, you know, breadwinner is not counted in the process.
Right.
But we are starting to see that. So what happens now? I mean, if I were one of those people, what would I do? You know, I'm not going to guess. I'm not going to wave my finger, and I'm not going to, you shoulda, you woulda, you coulda. But I know that those are talented, capable, hardworking people, and that we will find a way to make the best of all of those resources.
Well, exactly. And if those people are contracting, it means that they're running their own business.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of skills already. They're diverse in their skills.
And so I think to some extent, rather than look to the government and say, what are you going to do? How are you going to fix this? I think the government needs to look to us and say, hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah. How are you going to fix
this? How are you going to fix this?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We're counting
because
on
we are
you.
The resourcefulness.
Yes.
Right? This is us.
Yes.
If we don't innovate, nobody's going to innovate for us.
No. I mean, I'm counting on you as the director curator of the gallery to, you know, keep that cultural sector going.
Yeah.
And keep it interesting and keep it, keep that multiplier effect up. Right? And you're looking to me as a small business owner or a counselor to do my part. We have to rely on each other.
And
I know that sounds so
Well, but it's true. I mean, and that's also what Justin Trudeau said early on, that our diversity is our strength, and we have to make sure that we're utilizing all of our individual skills and abilities and strengths to do that. Because if we just sit back and say, no, that might, you know, my job is just this, that's all I'm going to do. Right. Well, we're not anything. We're just a bunch of workers.
No, not. And you know, we've done this before successfully. I mean, North America has done it before. During the Depression, as part of the New Deal, in the States, they started the federal art project, and they put thousands of artists to work, building murals and sculptures, painting, postering, really, really cultivating the culture of craftsmanship.
Yeah.
And a lot of those works can still be seen today, and it was one of sort of five pillars of the New Deal to get people back to work again.
And optimism would have been a direct result of
totally.
That. Yeah.
And it was a sense of, we need to rely on each other. We need to get through this fire together.
Yeah. Right? But also, like, a lot of people say, without the cultural things that are there to live for, why would you even need to, you know, why would you even need to keep being alive?
Yeah.
Right? Like, our community, our families, our celebrations, our food, our, you know, our history, all of that is culture. And if without it, there's no reason to be.
Right.
And so it does provide.
Well, there's no reason to live in a society. We could just all live on our own by ourselves.
Well, sure.
In the woods.
Like, eat because roots and,
and
stuff.
Culture, by definition, is the ways in which we live together.
Yes.
Right?
But that's what my sort of point is, is that it's everything.
It's everything.
And we can't separate it out. We can't say arts and culture is different and it's only for certain people, or it's a fringe, or it's a frill that we can't afford right now because we're in economic hard times. It is not. It is who we are. Mm-hmm. It is exactly what we need to keep us going and moving forward. And it's the diversity we need and the investment. You read that blog, Nonprofits with Balls, right?
I don't, but
oh god, it's so great.
Should.
The guy was just about a month ago or so, had a really great quote, and I can't remember it quite verbatim, but it's something like, you know, if businesses expect nonprofits to act like businesses, they have to treat us like businesses.
Yes.
And they're not treating us like businesses. They're treating us like leeches on government, you know, investment, but it's not like that. We do behave like businesses. It's just that our dividends aren't paid in cash to shareholders.
Yes.
Our dividends are paid in benefits to the whole community.
Yes. It's just how you define what a share is.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe that's what's happening. The sharing economy is changing our sense of value. You know, you don't need to own that car.
Yeah.
Right?
And the stuff.
And you don't need to own that hotel. You
right.
You can run the network that people can use to share.
Yeah. And the stuff factor, right? Mm-hmm. We've got, we're coming to the end of that cycle. I don't know how many more Walmarts are going to get built before the stuff starts.
Well, they're going to start closing some apparently. So
Well, we're starting to get overstuffed.
Yes.
And
even the president of IKEA said we've hit peak furniture.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
isn't that
big.
Amazing? So I can't wait to see what they're going to do next.
Ooh.
But those are the kind of companies you think,
peak furniture.
Great, that's what they call it. Those are the kind of companies who go, okay, where's the, you know, they look in everything like it's a gift bag. What's in there? What can we, you know, this is awesome. And it is totally about switching, right? Your point of view.
And it's okay to be wrong too, right?
Oh,
like
absolutely.
When they're trying to project into the future, what is this company going to look like in 10 years? What's the, what, you know, what's society going to want in 10 years?
Yes.
You know, they're going to be wrong about some things, but you got to still be thinking about it. You got to be planning and looking at all the possibilities.
Yes.
Because then you're ready.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. And I mean, those are the kinds of things, that say today, like actually today they're talking about in Davos, Switzerland.
Yeah.
And there are university presidents are there. Canada sent quite a few people. In fact, the CEO of Artscape is there.
Artscape?
Yeah,
they took our name?
They took our name.
How dare they?
So he's a cultural planner from Ontario, I think. And he talks about this concept that what we know about culture is it's creative placemaking is so important. And
I love creative placemaking.
And that we're cultural makers, right? And we need to keep making things. It's in our, that's who we are.
Yeah.
We're all makers.
Yeah.
So there was an article in the
Keeping in mind that we can't add to the stuff problem. We have to repurpose a lot too. Just saying, just pointing that out.
Yes.
Because I'm just going to make a tiny aside here. We'll try to stay on track before we go all the way to break. But sometimes I see a lot of artwork being produced physically, right? Lots of paint on canvases, lots of crazy sculptures and then stuff ending up in the garbage, right? Like that didn't work out. Okay. We have to rethink how we produce. Mm-hmm. Artists have a longer view, be willing to invest more time in artwork, be less concerned about commercial production, and be more concerned about quality. And I know that a lot of artists and designers are, that's all they think about is quality. But there are some out there that are just producing stuff. And we need to think about it more before we continue down that road.
Yeah, and I think it depends whether you're motivated by creating and creativity, or if you're motivated by producing.
Yes.
So some people who work in the arts are production oriented.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it depends on what they do for a living.
Yeah.
But this idea of the cultural makers is more that the arts sector needs to recognize that a lot of people are making culture.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Or cultural makers, city planners are cultural makers. Real estate developers are cultural makers. Mm-hmm. There's no line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're all, just like we're all economists, in a way, we're all cultural planners.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we're going to talk about what's happening next.
Yes.
And the granddaddy of art and culture in Canada is?
Well, Canada Council.
There you go.
Simon Brault.
Yeah.
I was so delighted to listen to him at the Creative Cities conference. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was just like, I'm looking around at the people around me. Excuse me. Are you guys not overjoyed here?
It's like a rock star.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was blown away, and he had some powerful words. Yes. I was so excited.
They're retooling. Everybody's retooling.
They are. Mm-hmm. They are totally transforming. Canada Council is in the middle of a huge transformation, and they're reacting to a vastly shifting arts and culture landscape, right? So they are trying to raise awareness of cultural content. They are trying to be relevant to all artists and all Canadians. They are targeting virtual arts, making sure that they're supported. And of course, a supreme targeted support for First Nations art and culture, mm-hmm. because it is the issue of our times, mm-hmm. to heal and reconcile.
Our most authentic narrative,
I think. Yeah. And so they are really putting some support behind it, because they recognize how important it is to give voice to all the levels of Aboriginal content, mm-hmm. and cultural everythings, mm-hmm. right? It's not just about, and you know, it's kind of interesting. Sorry, this is another aside.
No, that's all right.
On CBC.
Is one big aside.
It is. Really, tangent. So I'm going down the road. I had a meeting in Enderby. So I'm going down the road listening to this guy making a commentary on Leonardo DiCaprio's comments, mm-hmm. during the Golden Globe, mm-hmm. acceptance speech, about how he wants to make sure that Indigenous peoples have a voice. And the commentary guy said, you know, that's fine, Leo. Thanks so much. But having authentic content in the movie, The Revenant, and using Indigenous people to fulfill the Indigenous roles, that's all well and good. But if you really want to give a voice, then give some money to some Indigenous filmmakers.
Yes.
So that they tell Indigenous stories rather than having tell your white man story. Yeah. Telling a white story with some Indigenous characters in, mm-hmm. the background, right? No. If you want to have the Indigenous people have a voice, give the filmmakers, the screenplay writers, the musicians, the, you know, all of them.
Well, invest in them.
Some support. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that's such a good point.
And for some reason, when we talk about money in the, we always think it's giving or gift or contributing or donations. It's an investment.
It's investment.
And in the business world, we always talk about investment. We're investing. Yeah. When really, oftentimes, it's just giving.
Yeah.
Right? Like a tax break,
yeah.
in many ways.
Investing.
Especially at the much larger, I'm not talking municipal, please don't email me about city taxes. I know what you're saying. But, you know, at the large, giant corporate level, you know, the tax cuts of the last 20 years are sitting in a bank account. It's a known thing, dead money. We need to get that money moving.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything has to keep moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can interchange the word investment with donation in any conversation. Like if you normally use the word investment, replace it with donation. Mm-hmm. If you normally use the word donation, use the word investment and see how it works. Yeah. It's the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So be okay. Anyway, so yes. Yeah, so Canada Council adapting to a big changing landscape and trying to make sure that there's funding investment for all sorts of art sector initiatives that are not just about...
And this is like disruptive change. Like
it just, really is because it's not just changing. About, oh, here's some touring money for this dance company and here's some... Right? Like, it's not just about that. We're talking about making sure that the entire cultural sector has input and is supported, right? That there's this big circular effect here, a big cycle of support in all ways, not just in money, in preparation for the future, for a really different kind of future, especially with digital content. And, you know, I think Simon had a really good point about online content. He said it's kind of shocking that all of the social media content is provided for free to them, right? So where is the support for emerging arts when you've got YouTubers and people just uploading all of their new creative content, and then the social media sites like Facebook and you know, whatever else are just taking it for free. Where's the support then, right? Like, those people have to be supported. They
I mean, that obviously to feed. The distribution channel has some quirks that need to be worked out.
Yeah, and then they've got algorithms that decide what is the top talent, right? Well, maybe we shouldn't be using algorithms to decide on what the top talent is. Maybe we should have some, you know, have some agency looking at, okay, where's some emerging talent coming out of this stuff, and you know, find the quality content.
This idea that technology can replace, you still have to do the work.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's no algorithm that can replace intelligence.
Dreams don't work unless you do.
Yeah.
I think.
Anyway, so yeah, that was a very exciting seminar to be part of.
And yeah, so he came to Kelowna for the Creative Cities Network AGM in November? November.
I think so, yeah. October, November.
Wow.
So good.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, and he talked about creative placemaking, and he talked about public engagement, and, you know, like, all of those things are part of their thing now.
We're all cultural makers. Yeah. We all make culture, whether it's in your living room or in your neighborhood or...
Yeah.
Right? And they're even... At your quilting club, it's all culture.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think his parting gift to everybody there was, and a lot of people were from the art sector, lots of council people and people from city planning areas there too. But he said, really, the Canada Council is asking nonprofits and those kinds of agencies to move away from asking for funding and instead report on the benefits that they're already providing to their community and saying, this is what we want to enhance.
Yes. Well, celebrate the value that is created.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then your culture of your own community is being understood and respected then, right? You have to be reflective before you can go to Canada Council and say, can you give us some money for this?
Yes.
You've already done the work, right?
Yes.
You already say, look at what we're doing here. Look at what
the value we create.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we want to enhance this. So this is what program we're aiming for and we're proposing to you. So that's what he was telling us there. It was great.
And what did we, like, just a recent example, the Crowder for Miller show had 4,000.
4,000 people visited. Yes.
Yeah. And then if you multiply out what the impact would have been.
The multiplier we use for that is basically a one-day visit. Mm-hmm. And it's an average of $80 per person because... whatever it is, like only one out of every five visitors actually stay the night in town. And, you know, but there's a kind of a guaranteed meal because of a certain percentage that are from outside the Shoe Swap.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody that's considered inside the Shoe Swap, like if it's Enderby, Sycamuse, wherever, they wouldn't be.
And you kept track of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we tracked where they, like in our guest book, we had people put where they were from. So we kind of figured out it was half and half, the people from outside the region. Anyway, the multiplier effect is $80 per person into the community. So it was $170,000, I think, over those 2 months.
Which keeps moving around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's huge.
But mainly in restaurants and shops downtown.
Oh, it's probably more like $500,000, I bet.
Well, we try to be conservative, right, on that, small C conservative, because we don't like to make big claims. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that the Roots and Blues Festival has sort of a bigger multiplier number just because they are pretty much guaranteed event. People are staying overnight for two nights at least, right? well, maybe not guaranteed in one day pass or whatever, but our estimates had to be super conservative because we don't know, right? Like, we just didn't track how many people actually stayed the night in Salmon Arm. So we had to be on the low end. Mm-hmm. But even on the low end, $170,000 brought into the community
direct,
is pretty good.
That's, yeah, and that's direct. That's yeah. not multiplier. You got to multiply out, right?
Right.
So, and it's so true that we, it's the vernacular we use when we talk about culture is different than when we talk about business. And but we're both problem solving all the time.
Yeah.
And artists and designers are really good at that. And I think scarcity is our best friend in this case.
It is. Yes. So moving forward.
Yeah, we need to be less wasteful, more practical, more resourceful. And those are the things that they're talking about at Davos today.
Yeah.
So cool.
How come we're always on trend? Have you noticed that?
I don't know. Just
I think that we plan a topic and then all the world leaders say, well, like what Louise and Tracy are doing. Let's deal with that.
That's probably it. They're probably reading our texts. That's probably what it is.
That's exactly it. Yeah. See, there is government spies after all.
Yes. Yeah. They're after us. No, I think it's because we're open to the possibility. We're just sucking up what the universe is putting out there.
Yeah, we are.
We're picking up what they're laying down.
That's right. Yeah. And you're pretty, you stay in touch with a lot of important sources of information. And I...
AKA Twitter. Yeah. No, I do try to... I'm very curious.
Yeah.
I think and that's my...
Huffington Post also has some pretty fantastic articles about...
Yeah,
about
and those are just bloggers things. Designing content and putting it out there.
Yeah,
right? They're not getting paid.
Yeah. Well, I know, there we go with the virtual economy, mm-hmm. right? Like we have to figure out how to sort out content, mm-hmm. quality cultural content off of this free, like, you know, people providing yes. things for free yeah. site. This is crazy.
Exactly.
But it's gonna take a long time to sort out.
There's a number of really interesting opportunities coming for Salmon Arm. One of them is a renewed partnership with the First Nations. Mm-hmm. So important. And I sound like a broken record. The second one is the city has gone down the path of a cultural task force, right? To determine the scope and size and necessity of a potential cultural master plan.
Right.
What does that look like? How much does it cost? Who's involved?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that conversation is exceedingly important to have. Because we all have different views of what we need, but we're all working together. So we're all cultural
yes.
makers. And so those conversations need to happen. I'm going to chair that. I'm super excited to get
Yay.
That started.
Yay. Congratulations.
Thank you. And then the other thing is the Canada 150. Mm-hmm. Again, once in a 150-year opportunity yeah. to say to the world, hello.
Yeah.
Look at us.
Yeah. Well, and that kind of...
And that's what I want it to be. I want it to be something where people say, we have got to go see that.
Yeah.
And you know what people go see?
What do people go see?
Art.
Amazing, right? Isn't it? Why do they travel?
No one ever says, oh, let's drive up to Salmon Arm and see that, whatever, you know. They want to see a cultural place making. They want to see a yeah. place. They want to have an experience.
Yeah.
Right? Whether that's in the trails or on the water yeah. or...
There's lots of cultural experiences to have here that are not necessarily inside a theater, right? No,
yeah. Exactly.
Like just the look and feel of our downtown is a cultural experience.
Well, it is a culture and it's a work of art.
Yeah.
And you know why? Not because of the gallery, because of every single
Yeah, every
person
business, every, yeah, all the decisions that have been made about
taking risk, whether it's a landlord or a
yeah.
realtor or a, right?
Exactly.
They take a risk. Yeah. And how do we inspire them to
Yeah, to keep moving forward and yes. to kind of keep an idea of what is authentically Salmon Arm
yes.
in mind.
Yeah.
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 And I know you don't like me to overuse authentic, but
no,
it is the only word that really kind of helps me continue to define what it means to be this, right?
Yes.
Like this little pocket of our society.
Right.
And we have to stay true to that. We can't keep saying, oh, that community on the island did this and that's going to work here because it looks awesome there. We have to stop that nonsense. Then we go down the decorating route,
because
right?
then we can go live there if we want to.
That's right.
That. Yeah.
Think about what we already have. Let's enhance it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Anyway. What was my other thing I was going to, about the moving forward. Canada 150. So that reminded me about like the Paris World's Fair, right?
Yes.
And these are moments where they're kind of designed to look back and celebrate the past, but they became these incredibly forward-thinking,
the Eiffel innovative. Tower is there because of
the
World Expo. They were going to take it down.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know Space Needle?
Like, think about all the things that exist in the world because they were celebrating a moment. But what they were really doing was creating hundreds of thousands of other moments.
Yes.
Right?
Aww.
So exciting.
What a lovely quote. Did somebody write that down?
Oh, well, I want an Eiffel Tower. Not like an Eiffel Tower. I want Arms Eiffel Tower.
At the time.
Right? Or Space Needle or CN Tower.
Gustav Eiffel's lovely, lovely public art was hated by so many people saying, get that tower out of here. Get that thing gone. It looks like a giant smokestack.
I wouldn't put that in my living room.
Yeah. Doesn't match my couch.
Doesn't match my couch.
So they were like fighting it and so upset over it. And so, you know, the plan, okay, I can come down in 20 years. The city had the option of taking it down in 20 years. But you know what he did, Mr. Eiffel?
What did he do?
He turned it into a science laboratory.
Wow.
He talked to scientists and said, here's your opportunity to get up there and do some, you know, meteorology measuring.
Weather,
and like
wind, genius.
Yeah, turned it into a tool, basically.
Innovation. And if we think we have it bad, I guess, again, it's all perspective, right? There was a time where it was, everything was heated by coal, you know. London, foggy, scary, you know, dark.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate.
We've already come a long way.
Yes.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Drama. I love this part.
Yes.
You got the drama today.
It's true. There's so much drama to find.
Well, you know, we could not run out of drama. No. It's just really a matter of trying to choose the dramatic moment that best fits our
and we love
topic.
We love art. We love drama. So today we're going to talk about...
We love art. We love drama.
Yes. A snow artist.
Yeah.
It's so lovely and white out there. For now. I mean, I think it's going to melt soon and be all mucky and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, while it's still lovely and white, there's an artist. His name is Simon Beck. He calls himself the world's first and most famous snow artist. Oh, my, aren't we a big deal, eh? So there's it's on Board Panda. Board Panda is the source for all useless information. But this is interesting because what he does is he goes into a big field with snowshoes on and he designs a pattern.
Yeah.
That can
Earthworks.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
But totally temporary.
Absolutely temporary.
Really environmentally friendly too.
And this is a snow dragon, he calls it. And it's absolutely beautiful.
Wow.
Right? So nature is such a wonderful canvas.
It is, actually. And the thing about, okay, this is a takeoff from there that also applies to the Creative Cities Conference. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I learned there was that Earthworks is becoming a big land reclamation kind of utility, right? You got your certain land use commissions are using artists to reclaim old mines and landfills and
like brownfield redevelopment.
Yes.
Yeah.
But instead of asking,
very cool.
Yeah. Instead of asking, you know, a bunch of engineers, can you come up with that? They're asking artists to figure it out. And so artists are creating works out of these reclaimed sites. So there's all kinds of examples.
Very cool.
It is. Robert Morris is an artist in the States. There's also, Buster Simpson in Seattle. There's, Sarah Bergman, she's done the pollinator pathway. Did you hear about that?
I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard
about
that.
So there's all kinds of artists that are involved with, like they build, it's like they're building land sculpture that's permanent.
Okay.
And these are areas that become areas of interest. And they, like Robert Morris, for instance, leaves evidence of what was there. So, for instance, I think one of his was this kind of giant land form spiral, but he left these sort of skeletons of trees and stuff like that because it was a mine site. And I don't know, I can't remember exactly what the details, but it's really about honoring the history of the place.
Yes.
Creating something new that is, you know, that is meaningful and has a bigger impact sort of on the community. The community feels like, okay, now they've come full circle on that site and they can come together, use it as a gathering space.
So decommission it is, instead of decommissioning, they're recommissioning. something else, right?
Developing something positive, something optimistic.
And closing the circle.
Exactly.
Because this is what the Industrial Revolution was terrible at, closing the circle.
Yeah.
They produced, but they didn't close the circle.
And
now we have to close the circle.
Yeah.
We know that.
And sometimes the closing of the circle, if they leave it up to nature, can take, 50 or 100 years, and maybe it never happens because it's not properly cleaned up or something, right? Whereas in this way, they're creating something new, still using natural landform and everything, but still making something that celebrates the people effect.
Yes.
And so there's a nice combination of nature and culture.
Like that decommissioned bridge in New York City, it's called the High Line now. They planted, and you can walk over it.
Oh.
And it's one of the most popular attractions in New York City.
Really?
Yes. We should have Phil McIntyre Paul come in and talk to us about it. It's an urban trail.
Wow.
Out of a decommissioned, right? So recommissioned.
Right.
So we have to start recommissioning.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And then like Sarah Bergman's pollinator pathway, like what she did is created a system through the city where bees could pollinate their way through the city, because otherwise it's just a gigantic cement jungle, right? And people are having little gardens, little balcony gardens, and expecting bees to come and deal with their things. But there's no bees in the city because they can't.
Well, there's nowhere for them to be a bee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The pollinator pathway is all sorts of plants that are bee friendly being created along streets and parks, and everything connects.
Yes.
So that you've got ways of bees to get into the city and still live and survive and get out of the city, right?
Like yes.
All along the way. And there's also this really beautiful walk called the Long Walk. I think it's also in Seattle. That was, somebody asked, it was a corporation. God, I should have gotten all my details straight.
No, okay. It's not in a test.
Yeah.
It's not a job interview. Tell me.
This long pathway that was basically not really used because it's kind of wide open and not very interesting. So,
Unclaimed space.
Yeah. And it went from like Seattle to somewhere else. Like it's really super long. And there's nothing there. So the corporation that owned part of the land asked artists how about you guys make some kiosks and make something pretty along the way? But instead what they did is they created an event called the Long Walk.
Okay.
And so what they did was they had people sign up. It was like 50 people. They got their backpacks, their, overnight gear, super simple. And it took them like 6 days or something to walk this trail. But they kind of stopped and identified important parts of the trail and kind of did story making and, figured out where we were, how does this relate to our history? How does this relate to First Nations history? Right. And so this event became the art.
Okay.
And instead of
because
making more stuff.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a place 24/7, 365 days. It can be a place one day a year or a week a year.
So there's just lots of ways to look at that and be very considerate of our natural surroundings, not have to make more stuff, not have to change too much stuff, but still celebrate culture, still add to the economy, still make it meaningful and add to the story.
Create a place, solve a problem, put people to work.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think there's just so many options out there, and it being innovative just makes those options easy and manageable and doable.
Yes. And I think for innovation to occur, there has to be scarcity. Scarcity is always there, but underneath all that, there has to be confidence and certainty.
Yes.
So yes, the dollar is low, and yes, oil is cheap, and yes, there's huge opportunity there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you have problems to solve, connect to your arts community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are
some of the best problem solvers I know.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, we have a few minutes to talk about upcoming events.
Let's do that.
We happen to have the member show opening up this Friday.
Ugh. What a big job.
It is a big job. And
it's important because it's a creative place making exercise.
It is. And it honors a lot of people and it has to involve a lot of people. So it's always so much work and there's so many details. That sometimes what gets lost is how meaningful it is for the rest of the community to come in and be able to see their neighbors' work or their, right? So, member show coming up, opening night, Friday, January 22nd. So this coming Friday, 7 o'clock. Everyone welcome. Tom Brighouse playing piano, probably singing Dolores.
Uh-huh.
I know, because he always does. And food. We have the best and it's opening night food.
Yes.
Like, I've been to other opening nights, and it is really sad. We have such good food on our opening nights. Well, I can't believe some
come
other...
Come for the food, stay for the pictures.
Well, I'm, you know, quite honestly, I've been a bit like, you know, shocked at other bigger galleries opening nights that have some, like, one box of crackers and a sliced up piece of cheddar cheese, and that's
a bag of chips and a juice box.
Yeah.
Go.
I know. Yeah. And Dolores does such a nice job.
Oh, she does. Yes.
Anyway, so...
I wonder if our sponsor will be there.
Our sponsor is Jeff Stacer. He is the traditional sponsor of the members show. Bless his heart. He's been sponsoring for like 12 years
See,
now.
The business and arts, we all work together. I know. You know, because we always say this at the gallery, art is for everyone. And we mean it. And we need to mean it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good. But what about the sponsor of Artscape? Do you think he'll be at the opening? He or she?
I know. Okay, wait. First of all, this we figured out the plaid, the chocolate, the coffee.
Plaid loving, chocolate eating, coffee drinking.
Cheese, hard cheese.
Hard cheese.
Likes a hard cheese.
Appreciator.
So I'm thinking the multiplier effect tells me that that person will definitely be at the opening.
Yay.
Because there's hard cheese.
Yes. There's hard cheese.
There's coffee.
Anonymous, if you're listening, all the things we think you love. Ooh, wear plaid.
Oh, this could be and then we'll know who you are.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay.
No, but anonymous, all kidding aside.
Anonymous, whoever you are, thank you so much for supporting this show and supporting our conversation, because we think it's fun and important to talk about art and design and how it affects our world today.
And it is culture making and placemaking. Culture. And this is a creative placemaking opportunity.
After opening night, we've got coming up in February all kinds of the Shoesop Theater has a new production starting. The Film Society has their weekly films. They're in the middle of their spotlight run right now, I think, or maybe tomorrow night's the last night. And then also Shoesop Theater's Theater on the Edge is accepting their applications for
For the summer, for summer, the Fringe.
Yeah, yeah. So that's all happening. I think that, Jazz Club continues. I'm just sorry. I have to read because
Jazz Club. Yeah, Jazz Club is big, right?
Yeah. And then what else we got going on? Of course,
so it's time to get out of your houses, people.
Yeah,
and January is almost over.
It is. Yes. And then we'll be into February. Mm-hmm. Ancora Women's Ensemble has a concert in February. There's actually all kinds of musical events coming up in February.
And the film festival's coming.
Yeah. And Real Lunch. And so that's on February 20th, 21st. I mean, basically February is kind of the month where everybody goes, oh gosh, it's so gray out there. Let's have something fun.
Yes.
So there's lots to do coming up in February. Yeah. So check our website, www. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I forget the www is redundant.
Passé.
We don't even need to say it. SalmonArmArtCenter.ca.
Yes.
WW will be out there saying to me, oh, you shouldn't have said that. I know.
It's like you're saying his name, WW.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like it when you say WWW.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe he should consider it. Yeah. He should consider it a compliment when we accidentally say WWW. That we're actually saying, hi, Warren.
Hi, Warren.
Okay. So salmonarmartcenter.ca is our website, and you click on the participate page and get a listing by date of upcoming arts events. And then on the exhibit page there, you can see the upcoming exhibition details too. And our Facebook page is Salmon Arm Arts Center, and you can get information on that. And Wednesday on the Wharf, performer applications are now being accepted. So if you are a performer and wish to perform at this summer's Wednesday on the Wharf, get your application off of our website. It's on ours and still on the Downtown Salmon Arms website. You just download the little PDF, fill out a form out, and you can send an EPK by email. So that's not a problem. That's an easy...
Electronic publicity kit.
Electronic press kit.
Yeah. Press kit, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, and do that soon because February 27th is the deadline for the performer applications.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
I know, we're already planning for Wednesday in the Wharf.
Wonderful.
Yep. Nikki Weber is the coordinator this year, so she's all excited. She's already booked the school band.
Yay.
We're excited.
See, the cycle continues.
It does.
So chin up.
Chin up, be optimistic. Yeah, we got this. I like that. Louise is full of good compliments today. Or quotes.
Quotes.
Yes. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. See you next time.
We'll see you next week.